Welcome to Limitless with Lisa Z, a podcast about how to move from inspiration to action and bring our dreams to life. I'm Lisa Zahia, and each week I'll release two podcasts, one where I walk you through action steps about how to make your dreams a reality, with another podcast in which I interview amazing changemakers from all over the world. This podcast isn't just for listening. Take notes and take action. Let's ignite and change the world together. Hello and welcome to season two. I'm so excited about today's interview with Tiffany Madera, who is somebody that I've known of for a long time through the Middle Eastern dance world, but got to know during my time in Miami and felt connected and inspired by her as a friend and an artist. She has an impressive background, including a master's degree in Latin American and Caribbean studies, as well as a master's degree in performance studies from NYU. She is the founder of Hanan Arts, which is a nonprofit that brings dance as a tool for empowerment and social justice. She is a performer, professor, activist, museum professional, filmmaker, and nonprofit leader. She has many very exciting projects, including Havana Habibi, Dancing My Mother's Body, and her recent project, Tarab Duende. Let's get started. Tiffany, I'm so excited to talk to you today. And I ask everybody the same first question, which is, what inspired you today?
Today, I woke up and it was very sunny outside. And the sunshine and the blue water of Miami really inspires me. And I very purposefully chose this home that has a lot of natural light and sunshine and wraparound views of the water. So one of the things that delights me is to wake up, see that blue, and just let it totally nourish me for the day.
Absolutely. As we know, I'm also in Miami right now, and I've been thinking about this. Why is the water so inspiring? Like, it's amazing.
The water is inspiring. I mean, it has to do with the reflection of light and what's on the bottom, right? So, you know, when you go out boating, you're going to see different shades of blue and green and turquoise and aqua, and the reflection of what's happening below and above. And I think that that's an incredible metaphor, right? So the experience that you're going to have of the water has a lot to do with everything that's happening in nature and space and how to draw from that, because we're also in rainy season. So we know that those shades also turn to milk white and gray as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In general, what is inspiring to you in life? What do you draw from?
I'm very, very connected to nature. And, you know, most people don't know about my spiritual practice and how much my spiritual practice informs everything in my creative and artistic and public life. So what inspires me is seeing God's hand on the most simple, beautiful things. I mean, it's summertime. I'm posting a lot about mangoes on Instagram, but they're so beautiful. They're so simple. There are trees everywhere and, you know, free, if you will, and they're abundant. And thinking about the ripeness and the color and the juiciness and what they mean in so many different cultures, that inspires me. So I cut into a beautiful mango that was a gift this morning, and I just thought that was incredible.
You know, you are truly a creative, and I'm really interested, just as you said this, like something as simple as a mango, but how do you take the time and make the space to see those things? Because we can just run right through life.
Yes. So growing up, I always got in trouble in school because I was always accused of daydreaming and looking out the window and looking out into space. And I do a lot of that to this day in all the different professional spaces. There's a lot of what looks like sitting around and looking off into space, in my case, maybe nature. And that's where I get the download. Right. So to me, it's about creating the conditions to get the download, to let my soul space connect with nature, to connect with my thoughts and my dreams and let it come in. So there's a lot. And now, you know, there are memes and there's a lot of neuroscience and there's a lot of things on the internet that says creative people just need to sit around and quote unquote do nothing. And I remember in elementary school, I went to this very progressive elementary school and we had a philosophers come And I'll never forget, I was in the third or fourth grade and a philosopher came and said, can we ever really be doing nothing? And I was so young when I got this question, but there's so much richness and productivity in spending time just thinking and staring out into really the quantum field is what you're doing. So I spend a lot of time reading. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time writing. And I have a puppy now, which you might hear, a brand new kind of puppy in my life. So there's a lot of puppy time, just letting my energy field, letting my nervous system, letting my senses, let the beauty of life just come into me. And then that will create the conditions for the download. And then the download, I'm a visual thinker, so the download will be extremely visual. And then my own inner world will give me the steps on how to get there.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you feel like you have to give yourself permission to do that? Because it is, one, I think it's really important. I'm so glad you just said that. But it goes against, I think, especially this very American way of like hustle culture. Mm-hmm. So was there a time, or do you day to day have to be like, I have permission to sit and do this?
You absolutely have to give yourself permission. And one of the things about American culture, so I'm a multiracial, multicultural person. Mm-hmm. So I also have a very strong Caribbean identity, island and identity and approach to life that's very much about my racial and ethnic heritage. And so every culture has its own approach to productivity or thought process around it. But at the end of the day, we're in America and there's just a lot to produce in terms of financial stability, and it's really hard to do. And what I found is I've gotten older is that your own body will make you slow down. So there's that. And a lot of the work that I've done artistically is really looking at capitalism. It's really looking at intersectionality and how women perform in different transnational spaces. So my artistic and creative and intellectual research has also given me a path to think about time differently. And so we're here in America in hustle culture, those of us that have had the privilege to travel, in my case, I'm going to be very specific about the Caribbean and North Africa, the idea about time mm-hmm. is very different, mm-hmm. right? So playing with time is extremely interesting, thinking about time. And again, I think a lot of the creative work and the creative process is in the quantum field, which is a very different concept of time. So we have to give ourselves permission, and we also will benefit from thinking about time differently across culture and across, I don't know, maybe scientific approaches.
Absolutely. The first time I spent a lot of time in North Africa, I noticed that people don't tell stories linearly. And I was like, oh, like it affirmed for me that time is malleable. But I was like, look, they'll be like here and here. And I was like, why aren't we going in a straight line? And I recognize my own Americanness.
Yes.
And it's interesting, in Miami, yesterday, somebody said to me, she was like, you know, everything, just be aware, is happening on Caribbean time.
Yes, yes. And Caribbean time is very much a thing. And, you know, the times that I've lived in New York, you know, there's different instances in your life where you get into trouble for this, and other times when you are rewarded for understanding this. I know when I was in New York, you know, you get punished for being on Caribbean time or, you know, non-EST time. But understanding that, and I love what you said about linear time and linear thinking, because being a conceptual, non-local, non-linear thinking is a really important part of being a creative. And what makes those creative ideas come to earth and show up in the material world is being able to translate the non-linear time into the material world. And so that's a big part of bringing ideas into action.
Absolutely. This is interesting, because now I'm going to ask you about timeline. So feel free to use it whatever way you want. Is the reason I was interested in interviewing you, is you and I have a lot in common. We both started as professional belly dancers and have deeply and profoundly expanded that. I think still rooted in a lot of the things we learned and did as professional belly dancers.
So, can you talk a little bit, before we talk about how you did it, tell us a little bit about your journey into all the professional spaces you're in now? I mean, you are a founder, you're a curator, you're an artist. It's really amazing to see everything you've done. So, can you tell us a little bit about how that all happened?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think, the thorough line is storytelling and becoming. Well, I have several large-scale projects, but part of what you'll see connecting all of it is the idea of becoming. And the storytelling that happens internally around becoming. A lot of what has informed this trajectory is my academic and scholarly curiosity. And I understand in terms of framing positionality, the access to higher education that I have and how that has informed. But so much of my entire life path is this incredible curiosity to learn. I'm a lifetime learner. I just love culture and transformation. And one of the things that's really exciting that we do have in common is this passion for personal development and being in service of others in their development. And belly dancing is a deep love of mine. I love the dance so deeply. It's just always there in a sense of love. So I've danced my whole life, I think probably since age three, the whole ballet, and then I was a baton twirler and a tap dancer, and then I did some modern dance, and Afro-Cuban is a big part of my dance path, and then Middle Eastern dance. And so throughout my dance career, I've always had these very deep and clear and concrete downloads about what's next and what is the story and how does my own soul want this dance to take me into this next phase, into this next moment, into this next becoming. And being a part of storytelling is part of that. So I have grad schooling and I've been an adjunct professor in humanities and performance, as well as being a filmmaker and an art curator. And telling visual stories is my big jam. And so part of that visual storytelling is my body with the dance that I do. And then part of that storytelling is other people's work. And the stories that they want to tell, and then weaving that into this larger structure or this larger home of Hanan Arts. But the dance is always going to be a part of it because my downloads and my creative process is very embodied. It's visual, but it's something that I feel in my body, and my own body will tell me what I feel and where to go next.
So glad you're listening. This morning I was looking at the website for Hanan Arts, which is the organization that you founded. You're the creative director, doing all these different large-scale projects. And the thing I thought when I looked at it's so interesting that you said it's about becoming, because I thought she allowed herself to take up this much space. Because the thing I've seen a lot is people are like, oh, I'm just a dancer, I'm just a belly dancer, and they diminish themselves. What gave you empowered you to step into the larger space of, like, I think a lot of people would look at everything you've done and be like, that's a big deal.
So it's the people around me, and you made a post recently that we are, I don't remember how you phrased it, but a lot of us, we become the voices and the people around us. And I surround myself with people that think big and create big, and their thoughts are big. And I mentioned this to you, my brother, my big brother is one of my biggest influences in business and art. He is a very niche, high-end architect. Our closeness as siblings, he has shared this incredible connection to beauty, exquisiteness, and excellence. So there's a whole bunch of cultural patriarchy and family dynamic weirdness in what I'm about to say. So I totally understand that. They said, if you're going to be a belly dancer, think about yourself as an artist and work at the level and scale of art. And so at a very young time, as a belly dance creative, I thought about what I was doing, not at a local level, but who are the great artists that I would want to meet in other genres that I would like them to have a sense of awe or admiration or respect for the work that I'm doing. And so that's how I approached my dance career and Hanan Arts. I want to be in the room and in the gallery and in the museum and in the institution with other artists of other genres. And I want to be in that conversation. And the medium that I am bringing to the table is Rakshaki, is Baladi. And it's Baladi from a Cuban American, Miami born, Miami based global artist. And so I had to really educate myself on what is all of this intersectionality and what is this positionality through which and with which I am creating. And so I had to push myself at that level of contemporary art in terms of placemaking, in terms of becoming. And that is how I wanted to approach my dance. So I would like to dance forever, and I want to dance under specific frames and conditions that allow me to contribute what I have to contribute to the dance, which is my gift in the way that I know best.
Thing that I never heard you say in there that I love is, like, there's none of the sentence, I'm just this. Like, I'm just a dancer, I'm just whatever. And I recently was talking to someone, and she was talking about a big dream she had to move abroad. And she's like, but everybody has that dream. And she's like, I feel it in my body, but I don't know. And I see the antithesis of that and what you're saying. You truly have listened to yourself and learned to trust yourself. Do you ever have doubts in that process?
Of course there's doubts. I agree with you. There's no such thing as just.
Sure.
Because the I'm just, it's outside voices that are sneaking into your brain and sneaking into you, and you have to resist those forces. When your body gives you that push and that dream, then your body as a conduit to the universe is going to give you the ability to do it. So I get these ideas and these downloads, and then I start doing it, and the train leaves us to, you know, I agree, right? So I consent. I'm going to do this, universe. We're going to do this together. And then along the way, there might be all kinds of doubts and all kinds of anxieties and all kinds of fears that show up. And, you know, my own mom, it's like, why do you agree to do this if you're going to get so nervous and so anxious? Well, it's part of the process, really. It's just, and second guessing yourself and your choices. And a lot of the work that I do, so I'm not speaking as a performer, but as a cultural producer, I do these large-scale projects that involve so many people. And the work isn't hard. What's hard is dealing with the people. So, like, what creates the anxiety is dealing with the people, not the work itself. And so that obviously creates doubts about your choices, and you have to go back to the trust, and you have to have things in place. And again, your team, the people around you, real people around you. And I learned this in grad school at NYU. Anna Deavere Smith said to us, you need three people. Figure out who they are now. Who are the three people you can call at 3 o'clock in the morning when you have a real problem? Mm-hmm. A real problem, not some dilly-dally existential crisis. And for me, you know, this is a lifelong learning process, because sometimes lines get blurred when you're in creative work and you work with friends and you start off as friends and then collaborators, and you get your feelings hurt sometimes thinking someone is a friend and it's actually just a transactional relationship. So that's part of the learning process. But you need people close to you that are not jealous of you, that really love the mission, and you shining is no, it doesn't go through this grid about how they feel about themselves. And that's very hard to find. So the people close to you that really have your back, that are real sounding boards. I need a sounding board. Can you, because I check myself, right? So I very much am the type of person, I have people in my life that I said, I'm having a very strong reaction and I need a sounding board. And that is a phone call that I make, and I have some people in my life that I can go to for that.
This podcast is brought to you by Coaching with Lisa Zahia, a business development company which provides strategy, coaching, and staffing support to mission-driven businesses. We help create bold and impactful businesses and to help the founders become the people who can do it. Curious about how to grow your business? Schedule a free consultation at www.chatwithlisaz.com. www.chatwithlisaz.com.
I was actually struck the other day. I was with you and some of your friends, and you were talking about a show you recently had. You'd gotten the video. They were like, "We have to have a watch party." And I was like, "That's so beautiful," because it wasn't good for you, but they knew it was important and they centered it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's true. And celebrating each other, right? And so this year is a really big year for me, just linear wise in terms of age, cycles ending, cycles beginning, some capstone kind of projects and some new projects, which are, we say in Spanish, abriendo camino, so opening the road to other things. And you want people that can celebrate you, that can celebrate it, because you're really birthing something that's bigger than you. Yeah. So part of what's hard to find, but you can find it, and you have to ask for it, and you have to nurture it, right? You have to be that person for them, is celebrating the unique talent and gift that we're all bringing into the world and showing up to be incredibly happy when it occurs, right? So some of my very, very close girlfriends, we write books and we curate shows and we do transnational projects.
I think it's really important, and not something you see people recognize all the time, is like the idea of intersectionality, that there is the thing that we're doing and then there's the person who we are. And I'd like to hear more about how you do that in your work. I was really intrigued the first time, I mean, we were in the same dance community when you did the festivals in Cuba, and just like, to me, that's so interesting because I'm not just recognizing it, I'm bringing it to the forefront. Like, this is my art, the Middle Eastern art, and then here's my history, Cuba. And also, obviously, there's a lot of like historical connections between the Caribbean and the Middle East. So how did that come about? And how do you make that decision to be like, I'm not just going to recognize this, I'm going to make it part of my work?
Well, some of the response to that question is, again, listening to the call.
Yes.
And an organic process that I didn't set out to do. Mm-hmm. See this in the film Havana, Habibi. I went to Cuba on an artist trip through another arts organization to attend a festival. And I met a musician who learned I do belly dance. And he's like, "Oh, one of my friends from the university really loves this dance. You know, you should meet her." And she's like, "Oh, I love belly dancing." And then really what she was doing was kind of a mix of Bollywood and belly dance. And I gave a free class to her and her friends on the front porch, and then another one. And then I said, "Well, I'll come back for Christmas break." And then that turned into a 20-year historical event. Part of that is very organic and very much allowing myself to be a conduit and the gift that I came to do. And a lot of my process is about generosity and the hermeneutics of generosity. And that is one of the core and founding principles, beliefs, and pillars of Hanan Arts and the work that I've done. You know, through the academic work that I have undergone and that intellectual transformation, you learn about transnationalism and you learn about intersectionality. And it's something that we are subject to all the time, but we may not know what the term is, and we may not have the grid, you know, clearly outlined in our mind. But I had such a huge, huge sense of responsibility as a Miami-born Cuban-American going to Cuba. It's such a huge responsibility, not just in a hermeneutics of generosity, but also personal sense of self and identity and decency around what are the economic structures what are the balances? What are the imbalances? Cuba's an incredible teacher. Cuba and going to Cuba and being part of the Cuban diaspora is one of the most profound teachers around equality and inequality, identity and becoming. And so much of my work happened naturally and organically because of these really often painful lessons that came out of Cuba and this incredible sense of responsibility to my community in the island, in the diaspora, as my parents, and to my family on the island and my friends there on how to be the most conscientious, respectful dance colleague and collaborator and transnational intersectional artist. And it's a lifelong process. You get things wrong, you fail, and you succeed. And so Havana Habibi, which is the predecessor to Dance in My Mother's Body and even the Global South initiatives, was an incredible teacher and a very kind of mean mommy in terms of how you learn these lessons and creating the festival and the different years and the different iterations, because some of the festivals were not necessarily public, but internal. There is, how do I become an ambassador to this beautiful transformational dance that belongs to this geographic, geopolitical continent of Africa, let's say in a broad term? What does that mean to Cuba, to the Caribbean, when there is a very real transatlantic and transnational connection, and this idea of placemaking and positionality? So these are things that I learned along the way intuitively and through osmosis. And then I set out very intentionally to learn about this so that when I show up as an expert, as a leader, as a curator, this knowledge is embedded both intellectually, conceptually, but also embodied.
It's amazing. There's four different things in there that I picked up as things for folks to contemplate. One is that you followed the thread. Because if we get too linear in our time, we don't have time for the conversation, to the referral, to the dance lesson on the porch, to realizing that can be something larger. So I see people over plan oftentimes, I think, to deal with anxiety, but like, follow the thread. You might end up somewhere amazing. I heard you do that. And also listen to the call, like give yourself time to listen.
We have a call. There is a call. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been learning about the Akashic records and how, you know, according to this way of thinking, we embody with the soul, which is what we need at the time, but there's more up there. And throughout your life, you can ask for more, go in there, get more. And we have a call. I feel lucky, and that's not really the accurate word, because I do answer the call and things work out, and it might be bumpy, right? It might be, but it's how much are you really willing to do? Because one of the jokes that I've always said, you know, belly dancing is hard. There's a lot of muscular things that are difficult that we're doing, but we make it look so easy and we make it look conversational and smooth, right? If it's done with a certain level of mastery. But there's a lot that went into making it look so easy. And so this cultural work that I've done shows up looking beautifully branded in the way that I have cultivated. But there's really a lot of hard things that have gone into, and I've been willing to do it. And I remember in grad school, in my quantitative analysis class, we were learning about research methods and traveling abroad and doing research. And very interesting professor, he's like, you know, when you go out to do your research, you're going to get hurt. And he was not a touchy-feely guy. He was like a military political scientist. And he's like, you know, when you're out there, you're going to get hurt. And so there's a lot of that. And I feel that part of what happens is that for some reason, I don't know, a hardcore Gen Xer, our generation, especially my piece of the generation, we didn't expect things to be easy. Like we didn't have social media or even computers and internet and stuff for a big part of our development. So we don't expect things to be so easy. And so a lot of this cultural work and moving and answering your calling and answering, it's painful, it's lonely, it can be expensive, you get your feelings hurt, you get your like body hurt. And so are people really willing to do that, or do they just want to say, oh, I did this, right? So the I did this is just a very small piece of this whole world making around being a creative person.
Gen X is the best generation.
My God, I love us.
I love us too. Have you seen that some internet video of a guy running into a wall? And it's like, you know, Gen X, they just like brush it off. And then as he gets like younger and younger, they're like, the wall hurt me. But it's funny. But it also goes to the point, like, it's okay if things are hard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of good for you, you know? And I think that there's this idea of everything being instantaneous now. Like, I'm so glad I was raised without a phone.
Yeah, we didn't have a phone. And I think it must be really, really hard for young people with social media to have their becoming. I think that's really hard. And, you know, it's hard for adults now. It's hard for everyone. But yeah, this sense of answering, I think it's so exciting. This could just be something. And I think when you spend that time by yourself to answer, what is your gift? I did come into peace that I have a gift, mm-hmm. and I want her to live. And everything in my life is structured around letting her live and letting her be. And that's how I've done it.
I love it. The other two things you said that really struck me is you said, I got to learn. And it's like, I think this goes a little to the like Gen X thing. Like, I think a valuable asset is to give yourself permission to learn and not get so stuck in like, this is the way it is. And it's so important.
Yeah, something that really disheartens me, and I see this a lot in the belly dance community, is this sense of meanness or condescension around the things that people don't know, right? So there's a lot of people that market themselves as experts. And again, it's about generosity. So we can generously, as you do, Lisa, share knowledge, tips, excitement about life, approaches. And then some people spend energy on things that make them cringe. And because of the psychology of the universe, people will chime in. So you're going to get a lot more attention on like negative neuro-linguistic programming to the people. And then people keep going on that. And there's no expert, there's no professor, there's no artist that condescends what people don't know. And it's very strange. It's very, very strange to me. And so inspiring people to love, to learn about themselves, right? Because the dance that we do is just so incredibly rich mm-hmm. as a pathway, as a tapestry to know yourself and then to inspire people to want to connect that knowledge to the outer world, to more people. I think that's incredibly exciting. And learning is exciting. I mean, why are we here?
Yeah. I always think about the quote or phrase, like strong opinions loosely held.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, prove me wrong. I'd love to learn something. Great. But you have to believe in yourself to be willing to do that.
You have to believe in yourself. And so that's where it starts, right? So what are the building blocks for self-esteem? What are the building blocks to have a foundation to then go out and experiment and fail and be scared and be curious? What are those building blocks? And I used to think my mom was like too tough and too, I don't know how to say it in English, but too tight with me.
Yep.
Like too. And just in recent history, she's like, well, my job was to empower you, to give you mm-hmm. the skills and the tools to go out. And I, you know, spent summers abroad in high school. Like I was a young teenage girl, like studying very far from home in other countries. And so it takes a lot of self and a lot of trust. One, for a parent to do that, and like as a kid to do that. And you look at kids now, and I don't have kids, but you look at 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds, I don't see that as much, right? And so there's this sense of, and I call it mean mommy, but it's an important way of building the trust and the empowerment. And so much of my work and people that know me, like, is dedicated to my mom, and you see my mom at all of my events. So it's not that I had a mean mommy. That's actually not the point that I'm making. It's about how do we mother ourselves, and how do we frame our life in terms of mothering our life and birthing our life and reframing the way we look at the world. And so Dancing My Mother's Body is a big part of that. It came out of my research in grad school, and it has a lot of these writing techniques, and it comes out of being blown away, talk about inspiration, by French writer Helene Cissure, and she coined feminine writing and this idea of mothering yourself and mothering your writing. And so this embodied writing movement, thinking, becoming, came out of a lot of that very research-based philosophical approaches and thinking about how do we get empowered. So thinking about my own mom and spending so much of my life thinking that she was so strict and so tough, and really it was so nurturing and so caring and so empowering and so meaningful. And hopefully we all get to an age where we can like look back and reframe things.
Absolutely. I have a question. When was the last time you felt awe?
Very recently I did a performance, and it was a long time coming. It was a beautiful performance, and there were a lot of obstacles to get there. And it was large scale. So it was working with really just top-notch, world-class partners and venues and musicians. And so I did a performance called Tara Duende, and there was a lot of things involved and a lot of people, and a lot of the stakes were very, very high. And, you know, I was going to be performing after years at a performance at that scale in front of that many people with that much on the line. You know, there's always the behind the scenes obstacles that happen, which are normal. And then there's this sense of like, oh my God, what have I done? What have I chosen? Like, why am I doing this performance? So, you know, I framed it as my retirement performance, if you will. And if it's going to be my retirement, it's going to be like the best birthday party. I want the absolute best. I am like sparing no expense. I am doing every single thing I want. And I did it. And the performance was, you know, very much sold out and packed to the gills. And the lighting was beautiful, and the music and everything was so beautiful. And talk about, do you get scared or fearful? Yeah, I was just like, well, you know, my body, I have these injuries, I have, you know, whiplash and sciatica and all these things, right? And so there's just all these things that I think matter. And the truth is, I did the performance and I didn't feel fear, and it was complete awe, and it was so calming and so joyful. And our dear friend Valeric Molinari coached me, and we spent a lot of time in Egypt, in Miami, and she was such a big part of all of these creative decisions we got from my costumes in Egypt. And she gave incredible input around my hair and this and staging. And one of the first things that she said to me was, it was amazing to see you break through every limit that you just imposed on yourself. And there were moments in that performance, and my mom was in the front row, and I got to do, you know, my signature squat shimmy and point to her and kiss her from the stage and have 1,000 people clap for my mom. That was incredible. And that was a big sense of awe and just feeling at one with the music in the moment. Just let my mind relax from all of the barriers that I believed were possible, and just be with that ballady, just be with the ballady and let the ballady take me to where it wanted me to take it. And then there's all these questions of, you know, why me? But I am the conduit for that moment and that night.
Yeah. And sometimes I like to make that question, well, why not?
Of course, it's why not me? Because I went to Egypt with Valerik and I got to spend time with Shahrazad and be in it. Let Egypt remind me of what this whole trajectory has been about.
My personal experience with Egypt has been that it reminds you of things.
It does. And it's so clear. And you hear the messages so clear. I can't wait to go back. I mean, it's just like I'm counting the days, you know.
Something you said can be a great affirmation for all of us. Like if I reframe it into I break through every limit I impose on myself. Because all those things, I can't do that because we're choosing them. Yeah. When do you feel the most joyful?
I do feel joy every day. And joy is something that I've chosen as a way of being. Like I've chosen joy as a way of life, as a way of being in the world. And I'm going to feel joy every day. And there might be other things that come to show up and knock on joy's shoulder. But I feel joy in very simple things. I feel joy when I'm thinking of my family, when I'm playing with my puppy, when I'm looking at over my balcony. I'm quite obsessed with summer mangoes, as I mentioned, and people like gifting me mangoes because I grew up with a mango tree. And so I don't have a mango tree now. So having people gift me mangoes is a very big piece of my psychology and my sense of joy. So trust me, when I'm talking about mangoes or posting about mangoes, it's part of this larger connection to joy and time. You know, we talk about movement sometimes in moments of crisis and stress. I go inward very, very, very tightly. I just put myself in my home and I don't want to leave. And that's kind of how I recalibrate. And so part of joy is these bridge moments of like, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to move. I do Pilates now, and Pilates is very great for me. I mean, I know it's great for everyone, but I have turned my Pilates practice into more than just what's happening on that reformer. And I use it for visualization. I use it for deep breathing. I use it for manifestation. I use it for gratitude practice. So movement is all about it, my joy. But I also want to say that joy is my daily practice.
I love it. Have you gotten the calling for what's next for you? Any big projects in the works?
I do. I have a project. I have the download. I have the pictures. I have a map. It is very clear in my mind's eye. There have been conversations. I've invited some people into the process. So there is something very, very present that I think about every single day. And that's how I work. When I get the download, I work on it every day, even if it's just thinking, writing, or mapping. And I do work in silence for a long time. I'm not an announcer of I'm working on this. Mm-hmm. And you know, people like might breadcrumb on the internet. So my relationship with social media is super Gen X-y. You know, I like data and I like sharing information of what already is, right? Yeah. So that's part of that. But it's a very exciting international project with really great people involved. And so I'm in the process of fundraising and stakeholder building and writing it. And there will be manifestations of it coming online later in the year.
Well, we can't wait. If I want to wait patiently for this, what's the best place to follow you for good info on the internet?
The best place is hananarts.org. We have a newsletter. It's not quarterly. The way we work is more organically and through the Instagram, hananarts.
Okay.
I think it's Fine Arts Miami. But we have a fantastic newsletter. That's where you're really, okay. We have an incredible community around the world that stays connected with us through the newsletter. and very generously donates through the newsletter and the website. And that's where you will hear about what we're doing.
Tiffany, thank you. I'm so inspired. Creative process, listening to yourself. I think that for all of us, that's really important. And thank you for sharing that today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's it, folks. Another amazing episode of Limitless with Lisa Z. I am inspired and want to give you the homework. Take some notes, take action, do one thing today that can move you towards your dreams. Got feedback? Let us know. You can write to us at lisa@lisazahia.com or visit us online at lisazahia.com.